So what did we discuss in our previous class?
Last.
Yeah. This course is called Bhakti Shastri. Book is Bhagavad Gita. Third chapter was going on. And we completed the third chapter last week.
Modes to regulate attachment. Modes to regulate attachment. Modes to regulate attachment.
Modes to regulate, modes to regulate attachment. Yeah, the importance of regulating our attachments. Importance of controlling lust, yes.
Arises from the mode of passion and it does not go with old age. Yeah.
Lust doesn't go with old age.
It's very subtle.
Lust is very subtle, yes. It's not as manifest as anger.
The way to overcome
it is to surrender to the Lord. Devi Esha Gudamami, Maya this divine energy of mine is very difficult to overcome, but one who surrenders to me, it's very easy to cross.
We also discussed what gives rise to lust. For example, identification with the body and considering me and mine, considering the land of birth as worshipable and place of pilgrimage without even understanding that I am soul.
Yeah. Actually, it's reverse of what you're saying. The cause is different. The effect. The cause effect. I think you got it.
Oh.
Ulta. Right. So lust produces. Lust consolidates aham mameti, I and mine. Pumsa striya mithuni bhava metha. So because of this mithuni bhava, because of this lust attraction between man and woman, because of that. Centered around that, so many relationships are formed in this world. Based on that, the soul starts getting into the concept of I and mine. My wife, my family, my whatever, my relatives, my car. Everything starts from that mithuni bhava. Lust. Lust for material things. Lust for sense enjoyment. Alright. So, today we have 15 verses to cover. So, we'll have to do an express train class today. We will cover text from chapter 4, from verse 1 to verse 15. But before we get into text 1, we'll do Phalashruti. Phalashruti means?
Significance of
benefit of studying this particular chapter. Phalashruti. So, there is a pastime in the Gita Mahatmya where it is mentioned that if you know, in the everything is a conversation in the Padma Purana between Lord Vishnu and Lakshmi, right? The goddess of fortune. So, the pastime here is Lord Vishnu is mentioning to the goddess of fortune that by the Ganges in the town of Banaras or Kashi. So there is Kashi Vishwanath temple. Many of you have heard of this temple, right? So in Kashi Vishwanath temple, there was a saint whose name was Bharata. This saint used to daily recite chapter 4 of the Bhagavad Gita, which is called as transcendental knowledge. Now, previously what had happened was, this saint whose name was
Bharata
went to a place called Tapodan to take darshan of Lord Krishna. Now, after taking a Lord darshan of Lord Krishna, when he was returning, he took rest under two bale trees. You know what is bale tree, right? The same as bale patta, he said.
One that he offered to Lord Shiva. One that he offered to Lord Shiva.
One that offered to Lord Shiva, yes. So he took rest under two bale trees. Now, the way he took rest was, his head was rested on the root of one tree, whereas his foot was on the root of another tree. So that's how he took rest. Now after some time, he took rest and he walked away from there. Within few days, both the trees dried up and left the souls inside the tree left their body. Now those two souls got birth in their next lifetime in the family of a Brahmana. Both those souls became daughters of a very pious Brahmana. And when they were 7 years old, they traveled to Banaras. Who was there in Banaras?
Ram Shiva.
Okay. That's correct. The Saint Bharata was there. So, they saw this Saint Banaras. Sorry, not Saint Banaras. I told you I'm poor with pastimes. I always go for. Okay. Once I called Mandodari, yes. Mandodari was wife or sister?
Again,
I called sister in one class down. And Emmanuel was furious with me. He said, "You please don't narrate pastimes. Just stick to philosophy." Anyway. So when these two daughters went to Banaras, they met Sage Bharata there. And they prostrated in front of him and thanked him profusely. So this Saint Bharat was asking them, "Why are you prostrating before me and what are you thankful for? I don't even know you people." So they said that they started going into a pastime again, flashback. They said that on the bank of Godavari, there is a sacred place called Chinnapap. Now, there is a rishi called as Sachatap. Chinnapap and Sachatap. So this rishi was doing a lot of austerities in summer and winter. In summer, he used to sit under a hot sun, and in winter, he used to dip himself under cold water. Okay, to attain sense control, in order to attain Lord Krishna's lotus feet. Now, his bhakti became so high that Lord Brahma started visiting him daily. And Lord Brahma used to ask him questions on bhakti and austerity, like to this Sachatap Rishi. Now, seeing this, Indra got, as usual, insecure in the heavenly planets. If someone does lot of austerities, Indra gets insecure, because then he says that, okay, this person will become more powerful than me. So he decided that somehow we have to make this rishi fall down. So what he did was, he sent two apsaras from the heavenly planets to sing and dance provocatively in front of the sage when he is doing meditation. So these two apsaras, they came down and they started dancing provocatively in front of the sage. And when they were dancing, what happened was they had, wardrobe malfunction. Okay. And therefore, so the sage was very upset with that. Because obviously you can imagine, the sage is doing tapasya and, these people are just dancing like this, shamelessly. So the sage opened his eyes and he cursed them that both of you will become bale trees in your next lifetime. Like that. And Prabhupada also says, right, women and men who are too interested in exposing, their bodies. Okay, in the next lifetime, the karma for them is what? Tree. Because then tree doesn't need any clothing like that. Full time you can have like that. So, he cursed them to become bale trees. So, immediately these two apsaras, it was not their fault in one sense because they were forced by Indra. Sometimes our boss also does that in office. We do something, he tells you, go and tell this in the meeting. You don't want to tell that, but you have to tell that. Okay. So, like that, Indra was their boss. So, they said that, it's not our fault. Please pardon us, we were under the pressure from Lord Indra to dance like this in front of you. So the sage took pity on them. They said, okay, I can't take my curse back, but I can pardon you in one sense that a great sage by the name Bharat, who resides in
Banaras,
when he comes and takes rest, when you come in contact, physical contact with him in some manner, in the bale tree, at that time, you will be relieved of that curse. So they said that these people were reciting. So these two daughters recited all this. They said that is why when you visited Patapodhan, you rested beneath us. And not only he rested beneath the trees, but he also recited the... What did he recite? Any guesses? What he recited?
How
did you guess that? Fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Okay. Yeah, transcendental knowledge, yes. Right. So he recited that. So, and once he recited, so because he recited that, they not only got free from the life of a tree, but they also got birth in a Brahminical family. Not only did they get birth in a Brahminical family, they also lost all desire to enjoy the material world. So, three benedictions they got. One is human form of life. Second, in a Brahmin family. Third, with the consciousness of detachment. So that is the power of reciting fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So the girls went back, these two girls, they recited fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita throughout their lives and went back to God. That is the pastime. So that is the Phalashruti. Human life is guaranteed, higher birth in the next lifetime and detachment from material life. So we'll go and read the first verse. Transcendental knowledge. We'll read the first three verses. The personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna said, I instructed this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god, Vivaswan, and Vivaswan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind, and Manu in turn instructed it to Ikshvaku. This supreme science was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in the course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost. This is a key memory verse also, evam parampara praptam, often quoted in lectures. That very ancient science of the relationship with the Supreme is today told by me to you because you are my devotee as well as my friend and can therefore understand the transcendental mystery of this science. So what we'll do is we'll read verse 2 and verse 3. Mahesh Prabhu, you want to read?
Verse
2. Purport.
Purport?
Yeah.
This supreme science.
No. Purport.
Okay. It is clearly stated that the Gita was especially meant for the saintly kings because they were to execute its purpose in ruling over the citizens. Certainly, Bhagavad Gita was never meant for the demonic persons who would dissipate its value for no one's benefit and would devise all types of interpretations according to personal whims. As soon as the original purpose was scattered by the motives of unscrupulous commentators, there arose the need to re-establish the disciplic succession. 5,000 years ago, it was directed by the Lord himself that the disciplic succession was broken, and therefore he declared that the purpose of the Gita appeared to be lost. In the same way, at the present moment, also there are so many editions of Gita, especially in English, but almost all of them are not according to authorized disciplic succession. There are innumerable interpretations rendered by different mundane scholars, but almost all of them do not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, although they make a good business on the words of Sri Krishna. This spirit is demonic, because demons do not believe in God, but simply enjoy the property of the Supreme. Since there is a great need of an edition of the Gita in English, as it is received by the Parampara, disciplic succession system, an attempt is made herewith to fulfill this great want. Bhagavad Gita, accepted as it is a great boon to humanity. But if it is accepted as a treatise of philosophical speculation, it is simply a waste of time.
Okay, so we'll read the third one also. Gunamani Mataji, you want to read third one? Yeah.
There are two classes of men, namely the devotee and the demon. The Lord selected Arjuna as the recipient of this great science, owing to his being a devotee of the Lord. But for the demon, it is not possible to understand this great mysterious science. There are a number of editions of this great book of knowledge. Some of them have commentaries by the devotees, and some of them have commentaries by the demons. Commentation by the devotees is real, whereas that of the demons is useless. Arjuna accepts Sri Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and any commentary of the Gita following in the footsteps of Arjuna is real devotional service to the cause of this great science. The demonic, however, do not accept Lord Krishna as he is. Instead, they concoct something about Krishna and mislead general readers from the path of Krishna's instructions. Here is a warning about such misleading paths. One should try to follow the disciplic succession from Arjuna and thus be benefited by this great science of Srimad Bhagavad Gita.
What are the points here? I'm assuming that all of you have anyway read the purport for one. For coming to class. If you have not been reading, please do read and come. Responsibility for learning is both ways. The students, actually on the students. Cook fate mars. So please read and come so that you don't miss out on those purports which we are not reading. We will not be reading all the purports in the class, that's right. Okay. So what are the points in these first three verses? Or at least in the second and third?
Bhagavad Gita has to be understood in a disciplined way. It is especially meant for the kings or the leaders of the society.
Correct. Good point. Good observation. Bhagavad Gita is actually spoken for the benefit of kings. Why? Please raise your hand, otherwise I can. Please raise your hand if you want to answer. Yes. Whatever values the king espouses, those become the norm in society.
Krishna is mentioning here the qualifications of the person who should understand or read Bhagavad Gita. He is telling him because Arjuna is his devotee and friend.
Who is qualified to understand the subject matter?
Devotee.
The Pradhanaka can also go in behind so that there is more space. Yeah. Can go underneath the table or something. Someone can sit in that space.
Now the devotees can
move. Yeah, can all devotees move a bit? One foot ahead. Thanks. Yeah, anything else?
Yeah, there are many versions of Bhagavad Gita, but especially in English translation. And some of them are written by devotees and most of them by demons. So one should read those which are written only by the devotees.
So Krishna is also saying that in the course of time this disciplic succession was broken, and that's why he is again speaking to Arjuna.
This purport exercises some importance of understanding the knowledge which is written by a bona fide representative for a person. So you can just go to any other translations available by the person or they listen to the message of the Lord.
Anything else?
Another important point it says is we should understand Bhagavad Gita to become a devotee and rather than for philosophical speculation.
Correct. That's also a very good point. Yeah.
As Prabhupada always mentioned, people want Ram Raja without Ram. Like other devotees are writing Bhagavad Gita, they don't want, but they don't want to accept the Supreme.
Right. Yes. All good points. I think everyone has really got the gist of this. Anything else? Okay. So, in the previous chapter, we saw how lust covers knowledge. How lust covers knowledge. And how... Yes.
Someone was asking last time whether that online recording inside the reception. Asavari Mataji was asking because helping them to hear the live recording was...
Sachin Prabhu is not
here. Who is not here?
Sachin Prabhu.
Sachin Prabhu is not here.
That's why it's not
here. Why is he not here?
His daughter has some.
Dance concert for the child.
Alright. So, in the previous chapter, we saw how lust covers knowledge and how ignorance binds us to our own attachments. We also saw that the importance of moving to the platform of Nishkama Karma. How does one move to Nishkama Karma? By the process of developing transcendental knowledge. So, in these initial verses, Lord Krishna, in the fourth chapter, is describing how such transcendental knowledge, which will eventually lead one to Nishkama Bhakti and to Akama Bhakti, how that transcendental knowledge is supposed to be received. And what are the different principles around transcendental knowledge that one, as a devotee, needs to be very well aware of. And that's a, this is a very important chapter, because many times in preaching programs we get asked a lot of questions. And then the knowledge in this chapter really helps us to answer people who ask these questions. Also, it is mentioned that the importance of Bhagavad Gita for the royal order has been underscored in these verses. It was spoken to the saintly kings, Raja Rishi. Imam Raja Rishi Vidu. Sa Kaleneha Mahata Yoga Nashta Paranta. So, Raja Rishi. So, the kings, as someone said, Jaisa Raja Vaisa Praja. The way the kings are, that's the banner in which the Praja will be. If the king establishes strong shared values in the community, then society has got something to look up to, against which they can benchmark, or which is a barometer of how one is doing in one's life, like that. So that barometer has to be Bhagavad Gita, the scriptures. Bhagavad Gita has to be the, ideally Bhagavad Gita should be the value-based system based on which all policies, everything is scripted in society. That is real Ram Rajya, real Varnashrama Dharma is like that. Unfortunately, it is not like that today. The importance of Bhagavad Gita, therefore, because Bhagavad Gita is a subject matter for the top class persons in society, Lord spoke to, first, who did he speak?
Vivaswan.
To Vivaswan, Sun God. Because Sun God is, from the sun, it is said that all the planets in the universe manifest. This is Vedic version. Big Bang is different. We don't understand that. Neither does the person who said it understand. That's a different issue, right? But in the scriptures, it is mentioned from the sun has come all the planets. So the Adipati of the sun god, Vivaswan, he was the most powerful person. So Lord gave Bhagavad Gita first to him. Because when a powerful person gets it, then it's easily accepted by people down the line. So many times people ask question, Bhagavad Gita was only spoken now. Before that, how Varnashrama Dharma was running, etc. Lord is talking all these things. So we have to tell them that, excuse me, Bhagavad Gita was not spoken for the first time in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Bhagavad Gita was reiterated in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, but not spoken for the first time. Like, many people don't know this. Even frankly, I didn't know this. Because when someone says, where was Bhagavad Gita spoken for the first time? Everyone says Kurukshetra. But no, here we understand it was not Kurukshetra. So the Lord says, though it was spoken there, over a period of time, the science is lost. And therefore, I am speaking it again to you. In our childhood, we used to play a game called telephone. Have you played that? Have you played telephone game? Yeah. You sit in a circle and then you whisper something. You may say ladder. No. So by the time the other person hears, he may hear peda. So he will say peda. By the time it comes out, someone says rabbit. Actually, it's a test how message gets distorted, you know, within a very short time, like that, right? So that's what happens. So you can imagine, Sun God, so how many years back that was spoken? So over a period of time, that message got distorted, contorted, lost. Therefore, Lord Krishna is speaking again in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Also, it is under, and then this message of Bhagavad Gita has been passed through disciplic succession, through a set of responsible people who will not distort that message. One greedy man can completely give a different interpretation, and unfortunately that has happened already in Kali Yuga. Even within these 5000 years now, we have different interpretations of Bhagavad Gita. So Bhagavad Gita has been spoken, also it is mentioned in these purports that Bhagavad Gita has been spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, who is Avapaurusheya. Avapaurusheya means he is not a mundane conditioned soul, he is not an ordinary conditioned soul. Therefore, whatever he has spoken does not come under the four defects, which is making mistakes,
cheating,
illusion, cheating propensity, and senses are imperfect. Okay, so it doesn't come under that. So it's perfect, whatever the Lord spoke. And again, 40 years ago, this Bhagavad Gita has been, after Lord Krishna, who has renewed the Bhagavad Gita? Srila Prabhupada did. Okay. He cut across, because again, you know, Sir Kale Naya Mata Yoga Nashta Parantapa. All the Mayavadi started giving their own interpretations. Srila Prabhupada wrote Bhagavad Gita as it is for all of us. So again, it has been re-established in one sense. So the unscrupulous commentators have written Bhagavad Gita with a demonic mentality. Some people wanted money, some people wanted popularity. Many of the people who have written Bhagavad Gita, they have written it during their retirement. Philosophically inclined, LIC job is over after 40 years, to sit and write Bhagavad Gita, like that, to get popularity, just because they had some talent and they wanted to write something which will appeal to the general masses, Hindu community. So they wrote something. But obviously, people who have read such commentaries have not gone anywhere in life. But people who have read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, their lives have changed. So that itself speaks the power of Bhagavad Gita as it is. Finally, Arjuna's qualification. What is his qualification? Lord says, you are my devotee and friend. Because only a devotee can understand Bhagavad Gita because he has a very intimate relationship with Lord Krishna. Raja Vidya Raja Guhyam Pavitram Idam Uttamam. The Lord says in 9.2. So, devotee has a secret relationship with the Lord. Right? So, the relationship between the devotee and the Lord comes under Rahasya. Rahasya means what?
Secret.
Yeah. Secret, confidential, mysterious. There's a different relationship. Whereas a non-devotee's identity is covered by Maya all the time. And Lord Krishna is in no mood to remove the ignorance of non-devotees. He is in no mood to do that. So he leaves them alone. So therefore, he is telling Arjuna that because you are my intimate servant and my friend, therefore, I am speaking these signs to you. Otherwise, you know, I want to leave those people who want to enjoy the material world, who don't consider me. I just want to leave them to their free will. He's not partial in one sense, but he's still favorable to his devotees in that sense. He doesn't compel anyone to approach him. Also, yeah, please come. You want a chair? So, again, as someone made an interesting point, I don't know who said this in the classroom just a few minutes back. One of you said that Bhagavad Gita is not for... You made that point, I thought. It's not for scholars.
It's not for philosophical...
Yeah, it's not for philosophical speculation. I don't know whether I think I have mentioned this in the past before in our Bhakti Vriksha programs. When myself and Yamanalila, we were in Japan, there was once Gita Sammelan they had organized. No? I told you before, right? Do you remember? Gita Sammelan they had organized in Tokyo somewhere. So we went there, okay. So there was one small room and many people were sitting in the Gita Sammelan like that. So the devotees took me there. One Sanjay Krishna Chandra Prabhu, who was my mentor, he took me there to the Gita Sammelan. He said, you also come along with me. We'll sit. I said, I don't know anything. I cannot participate. I got scared, going. The previous night I couldn't, actually I was very restless. What will I do in Gita Sammelan? Like that. It was 2001. So he said, no, you come, you don't have to speak anything. I said, don't ask me any question there. No, I don't know anything. So I'll just sit and watch you. So I was watching the fun there. So I went there, I sat. So one person came there and he was from Maharashtra. And typically, some people, like that, who are, who are born in Brahmin family and who have got exposed to this, Bhagavad Gita and Vedas, they become very adept at reciting slokas. So you ask them, okay, they can recite the entire Bhagavad Gita to you, like that. So he was one such person. From childhood, he had read the Bhagavad Gita. He was able to recite anything and everything. So he was going on reciting something here and there. And people were just like that. Everyone was in awe. Except Sanjay Krishna Chandra Prabhu. His blood pressure was going up there in that room. I saw that he was really getting restless there. So then he finished everything. And then he sat down and then Changus and Mangu came on the stage and then he started glorifying. Ye, we are so fortunate. Ye itne mahan hai. Inhone Bhagavad Gita pura pad liya hai and he knows everything ulta sida. Anywhere he can say whatever. And then kept saying. And then finally they requested Sanjay Krishna Chandra Prabhu, would you like to speak anything? And then he finished everything after that. He said, what is the point, of having all this sammelan? Bhagavad Gita, today is the day. That was Gita Jayanti day of that day. Yeah. We have to really understand what is the message of Bhagavad Gita and apply it in our life. No? If we are just trying, if Bhagavad Gita, the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, the ability to recite shlokas makes us very proud and it exactly takes us away from the path of surrendering to a spiritual master, then what is the point? So many people get entangled in these kind of things. Yamanalila and I were also discussing the other day, even when we are holding all these competitions, the children competition, sloka competition, this competition, that competition, when we are holding all these things, yes, the competition is held so that the children develop a mood of excellence to serve the Lord. Okay? But the competition should not be given more importance, it should not spoil the entire mood of the whole event with everyone trying to think that, you know, somehow my child should outperform, you know, that person's child like that. Okay. And then what happens, the whole mood is just, we are not there anywhere. We are not achieving what we want to achieve by all these programs, you know. Then it leads to politics and it leads to one devotee, not Mataji ko bura lag gaya types. Again, it goes into that story. Lagta hai bura lag gaya in logon ko. So, and then bura lagne mein phir bura zindagi bit jayega. Full life will go. Bura lag gaya means what, Mataji? Mataji felt bad like that. Or that Prabhuji felt bad like that. So, people start feeling bad after some competitions and all that. Because something has gone wrong. One devotee cannot get along with another devotee. Or one devotee thinks that, no, this has not been fairly assessed, that has not been fairly assessed. So sometimes all these things, they have to be done very carefully. Otherwise, what will happen? The whole intent of doing these whole things is lost. The whole idea of these programs is what? To give our children aptitude for the message of Krishna. So that from the very early stage, they can mold their lives like that. And also, by-hearting shlokas is not a problem, because in the childhood age, one must by-heart these shlokas. It is very important, and we are very thankful to Chandravalli Mataji. She established this system in this temple. So, by-hearting shlokas is very important, because at a very old age, you know, for us, for example, after 40 plus, you know, difficult to by-heart anything like that. Okay, so one shloka takes a lot of time, you know, and then we forget also on top of that. So this is the age to by-heart. So these children can then become very powerful preachers if they live what they by-heart. So by-hearting is not a problem, but by-hearting has to be followed by living. Sadhana, seva and sadachar. So Bhagavad Gita, whatever we study, it has to manifest in our sadhana, in our devotional practices, in our service and in our behavior. If after all these things, then we lose behavior towards one another, then we have not achieved anything at the end of the day. So Lord Krishna is reminding us that it is not something which is for philosophical speculation. Bhagavad Gita should not be taken as a treatise like that. Bhagavad Gita should not be used as a tool to improve our own prestige, grossly or subtly, like that. So once His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj, I think I told that in the class before, but I'll still reiterate that because it's very essential in the mood of this class today. The devotees went to him and said that Prabhupada marathon book distribution is starting from tomorrow. Maharaj, please bless us that we are the top book distributors, like that. We want to come, we want to do better book distribution than anybody else, like that. So Maharaj said, I bless all of you that you will do top class and after that you will come last. Right? You do your best but still you come last, like that. So the whole idea is not to come first. Not that which temple came first in book distribution and which temple came second and third. Yes, the mood should be to come first, but to excel, to do better than others. But then that there should be no attachment that, you know, the result should not be that, okay, I should be recognized as the top book distributor, or this temple should be the first in book distribution. Not like that. It's incidental. If it happens, that's Krishna's mercy. But effort should be put as if that goal is very important, because then we are serving Prabhupada much, much better like that. So even in all these competitions, etc., we must do our best to train our children so that they perform better and better in the absolute sense for the pleasure of Lord Krishna. But not with the mood that somehow my child should get ahead now because the same person is getting winning and then let me put my child ahead. No, not that kind of mood. That's not acceptable. Then we are losing something, you know. And when that starts happening, then the mood from one person catches on to another person. Then from another person it catches on to the third person. Then it's very fast. But if the person changes the mood, saying that, no, I don't care about this, I'll do my best, we want to do it for the pleasure of Srila Prabhupada, then that mood also catches on to that other person. Everyone else will realize, look, that Prabhuji or Mataji, what consciousness they have, brilliant consciousness. They have this kind of consciousness, so let me also learn something from that. And then there is complete bonhomie in the congregation. Everyone has got good relationships. Nobody feels bura about anything. Right? So everything is going nicely after that. Text 4. Arjuna said, the sun god Vivasvan is senior by birth to you. How am I to understand that in the beginning you instructed this science to him? This is a very beautiful question, Arjuna. It's a very nice way of asking a question. So let's read this one purport. Jayamani Prabhu, you want to read?
Yeah. Arjuna is an accepted devotee of the Lord. So how could he not believe in Krishna's words? The fact is that Arjuna is not inquiring for himself, but for those who do not believe in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. or for the demons who do not like the idea that Krishna should be accepted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For them only, Arjuna inquires on this point, as if he were himself not aware of the personality of Godhead or Krishna. As it will be evident from the 10th chapter, Arjuna knew perfectly well that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the fountainhead of everything and the last word in transcendence. Of course, Krishna also appeared as the son of Devaki on this earth. How Krishna remained the supreme personality of Godhead, the eternal, the original person, is very difficult for an ordinary man to understand. Therefore, to clarify this point, Arjuna put this question before Krishna so that he himself could speak authoritatively.
Okay, that's good. So what are the points here?
Arjuna is asking this question to provide clarification to people like us, not for himself actually.
And then he was saying how it is mostly to convince other people who don't believe that Krishna is God. But I was thinking most people don't even believe in God once you speak of a sun god. Like, how would they get convinced that Krishna spoke to the sun of the god of the sun, which might have been his prophet for them?
Is that a question or a...
Yes.
What's the question?
The question is, Arjuna was speaking that to try to convince those who don't believe that Krishna is God.
Correct.
That he is actually God.
Yeah.
And he was saying he spoke to the sun god, but most people in this age don't even believe in God.
Yeah.
What to speak of a sun god?
Mm-hmm.
So it might be a bit far-fetched for them to say, well, actually Krishna talked to the god of the sun, and wouldn't that be a bit much for them?
Yes. So that's why Bhagavad Gita is not for... Bhagavad Gita is... Actually, it's mentioned somewhere. Bhagavad Gita is an advanced scripture. It is not for neophytes. It's mentioned here in the purports itself. So directly for neophytes, we don't start with Bhagavad Gita ever. Even when we do Bhakti Vriksha programs, we never directly start with Bhagavad Gita. Dharma Kshetre, Kuru Kshetre, okay, everyone sit down. No. That's not the way we do programs. The first thing we talk to people is, what is the goal of human form of life? Right? Then we tell them, what are you? Who are you? You are the soul, not the body. So it takes us almost 7 months to come to the point of Bhagavad Gita. So we do the Science of Self-Realization series before that. So even for devotees, most of us, very few of us, I think, would have started reading Bhagavad Gita directly and understood anything. Attempt we all made. But when I, for example, when I opened Bhagavad Gita, I didn't understand head or tail or what is it. I couldn't understand the difference. I struggled with difference between Brahman and Brahma and Brahman. Yeah. I always used to struggle like that. Brahman, I never understood what it is, right? You also had the same problem. So Mataji can relate, she had the same problem, right? So therefore, Bhagavad Gita is not for neophytes. It is for some people who have a little bit of faith, but who still do not understand who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For people who do not have any faith, that is why Srila Prabhupada wrote so many books, Matchless Gift, Coming Back, Journey of Self-Discovery, Science of Self-Realization, so many books Prabhupada wrote. What is that? Laws of Nature.
Karma. Law of Nature.
Yeah? Yeah, all those books Prabhupada wrote.
And also in previous purport, it was mentioned that there are two kinds of people, devotees and demons. Demons anyway doesn't believe in God. So it's only meant for the devotees.
Yeah. And Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for the your devotees. Nirmat Sarana. Where it is written?
First canto,
second verse, right? Sorry. Dharma Projito Kayato Nirmat Sarana.
Second or third verse.
Second or third verse. Yeah, it's mentioned. It's meant for those people who are completely free of any desire. So people who are completely free from material desire and envy, they absorb most from Srimad Bhagavatam. And people who have faith, they absorb Bhagavad Gita very well. Though they may not be on the Akama platform, Nirmat Saranam platform. And obviously Chaitanya Charitamrita is completely different. It's for those people who have finished Bhagavad Gita, and Prabhupada says it's a PhD level study. Chaitanya Charitamrita. Alright. So, in this particular verse, Arjuna is demonstrating the etiquette of how to ask questions to a person who is giving us transcendental knowledge. So, the language which he uses is something which we can all directly emulate that in the class. So if Maharaj, for example, Gurujan Prabhu is sitting, he is making a point, then we don't ask Maharaj like this, Maharaj, but how you can say like this, you know? This is one way of asking question. But Maharaj, how you can say that Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead? This is one way of asking a question. Another way of asking a question is, Maharaj, how do we understand what you are saying that Lord Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead? Obviously, you know which one is better way of asking, right? So here Arjuna is also asking, how do I understand? Not how can you say like this? And this happens. In Toronto, when we were there, when Bhakti Brihad Bhagavat Maharaj, we went to a home program. So the person who was conducting the home program, he was a very fixed up devotee. But his father was a little bit argumentative type. So he brought Maharaj to his house and his father started arguing with Maharaj. But how you can speak like this? Mahatma Gandhi was a great person and this and that. He was talking about the fact that, you know, there is a fighting for the nation is one, right? But real Mahatma is what? Sa Mahatma Su Durlabha. What is that verse? Which says Sa Mahatma Su Durlabha. Bahunam Janmanamante Jnanavan Mam Prapadyante Vasudeva Sarmamiti Sa Mahatma Su Durlabha. So he was talking about Mahatma Gandhi. So he said, yes, he was a great personality, no doubt. But a person who is surrendered completely to Lord Vasudeva, who is completely working in the interest of the welfare of the entire mankind and aiding them to go back to Godhead, removing all their false identity with nation, society, blah, 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 blah. Such a person can be called as a Mahatma. So he had a big vivad with Maharaj. I don't, how can you say like that, etc. Rather than that, the way of asking Maharaj is, even if you have not had that idea, you can say, Maharaj, so many people are there, great statesmen, great leaders who also are called Mahatma. So how do we understand what is the meaning of a highest Mahatma? How do we understand the title, the true import of who is a Mahatma? So this is the way he could have asked that question. He would have still got the same answer from Maharaj. So why lose etiquettes while asking a question? So Arjuna is demonstrating to us how to do pariprashna. And we will come to that verse very soon. Tadvedi pranipatyana pariprashna seva. Questions has to be asked with humility and with a general, with a genuine mood of understanding an answer. Not for initiating a vad vivad, a debate like that. Because question can be asked for many purposes. Question can be asked, for example, you know, by many times, you know, people ask questions just to garner attention. Somebody is not getting enough attention. So ask question like that. We have seen many times that happens. Not of course among devotees, but sometimes, especially in new programs, we ask. You know, people try to garner attention, so they ask questions like that. Questions can be asked even out of arrogance. Right? Srila Prabhupada was lecturing, I think, in one of the best famous universities in US, and someone after full class of Prabhupada was asking, what is it that you are wearing on your head? What is that mark on your head? So Prabhupada said, no. What kind of question is this? Prabhupada said, what is it that you are wearing on your neck? He was wearing a tie. Why do you need that? He asked. So Prabhupada said, why do you need a tie? Actually, you don't need a tie to do any work, isn't it? Successful managers are there. Dhirubhai Ambani also did without tie, isn't it? So you don't need tie to work, right? So Prabhupada countered back. He asked, and then Prabhupada said, when a person, saintly person comes, ask relevant questions, sensible questions. Don't waste time in asking, you know, useless, you know, technical questions. Ask something by which you can change your life. So that was the mood of Srila Prabhupada. So devotees sometimes ask questions for various things. Some people ask questions to show off their knowledge, to impress. Some people ask questions ingenuinely. They ask, Maharaj, I'm not asking this for myself, but Maharaj, I'm asking for general preaching purposes. How to overcome sex desire? Like that. As if this person has completely overcome. You know, Paramahamsa. Not relevant for me. I'm asking from preaching point of view for others. Like that. So, this is an ingenuine question. Like that. So, and then some people can ask questions tauntingly also. Many times people ask, so you're saying chanting is enough to go back to Godhead? That is taunting question. So that is another way of asking question. Or some people like to test the knowledge of the speaker. So they ask questions like that. So somebody, you know, suddenly ask, you know, some question will come up. Now the person may not be, you know, following any four regularity principles, maybe eating meat and drinking alcohol and watching T20, but the person will come and ask, can you please tell me the meaning of Aham Brahmasmi? Like that. Oh, So that's an advanced question, right? First, let us come to human platform of life. Then we will find out what is Brahman and Satchidananda and all that. But suddenly in the first class itself, somebody will come and ask this, you know, very fantastic questions like that. So questions have to be genuine like that. Some people will ask questions out of envy to derail a class. Abhi isko dikhata hu main kaun. I'll put him down right now. Let me show him what this fellow is. He's sitting on the Vyasasana. I'll prove it that you are not qualified to sit. So out of envy, people can ask questions to get even with others. People, we have seen, people ask questions to get even with others also in the class, like that. So somebody is sitting there and they have offended you. So you are asking question, Maharaj, how to, you know, some people who are second initiated also are behaving like this, Maharaj. So second initiated people can do anything, Maharaj, in the temple. How do we understand that? So you know that the question is not, you know, asking Maharaj anything. The question is a taunt that side. I'm asking question for... Like that. That mood is there. Or some people will ask questions which are irrelevant. Sometime, one day somebody asks question to one Maharaj, what is the height of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Exactly how tall is it? Now what kind of question is it? Actually it was asked. Maharaj was extremely patient with that question. So I was shocked. What kind of question is this? So, and Maharaj had just built up the mood of some Chaitanya Charitamrita. This question came from somewhere. Or some people give a purport while asking a question. So you don't know whether it's a question or whether it's purport. Maharaj, actually, you know what, you know that, blah, 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 blah. It's going on and on. So finally, Maharaj is asking, Prabhu, is that a question? Like that, after a long purport like that. Okay. So we don't understand that. So Arjuna is demonstrating the way of truly asking a question for one's own benefit and for Loka Mangalam. Similarly, Parikshit Maharaj, Sutta Goswami was also asked by the sages, you know, in Naimisharanya questions. And Parikshit Maharaj is also asking questions to Sukadeva Goswami. So there is a verse in second canto, first chapter. I think it is, it's there. Varyan esate prashna krito loka hitam nripa. Means your questions are glorious. He is being congratulated. Parikshit Maharaj is being congratulated by Sukadeva Goswami. Varyan esate prashna. Your questions are glorious because the answers to these questions are loka mangalam. It is meant for krito loka hitam. Logon ke hit mein hai. Loka hitam nripa. And then, the next two lines also, I forgot the next two lines. Anyone remembers this verse? The next two lines he says, otherwise people have so many subject matters for hearing in society. It is like that. People ask so many questions otherwise, which are not relevant for the goal of life. What happened to that Aishwarya Rai's son, that baby? You know, when is the first birthday? No. Whether Amitabh Bachchan is holding, you know, the hero, Bollywood hero is holding birthday in Taj Mahal Hotel, or whether he is holding somewhere else, you know, these are the kind of questions. Questions which are more pertaining to, you know, gossip and, you know, inquisitiveness which is not required, right? And many of the times you go to that Kohl's and Safeway, you will find that magazine, is Kate pregnant? You know, it will be written there in the magazine. And I wonder, how does it matter if she is pregnant or not? Who cares at the end of the day, correct? Or why she left Tim, something will be there in that magazine, right? So and you are wondering, and somebody will say, why she left him? They have such kind of inquisitiveness. Why that fellow left him? That is a big inquisitiveness right now. Whereas the true inquisitiveness means what? Every day by rising and setting of sun, we are one step closer to death. How to go back to Godhead after this and not continue in this, rotting in this material world. So these are real questions. Krito loka hitam nripa. Everyone is benefited by these kind of questions and answers to these questions. Like that. And genuine questions are a food for the acharyas. For example, we have realized in our own Bhakti Vriksha, we have seen when His Holiness Sankarshan Das Adhikari Maharaj comes and when Bhakti Vishrama Madhav Maharaj comes, we already keep a basket of questions ready for them. And they are very happy. Once Maharaj was telling me, Bhakti Vishrama Madhav Maharaj, when I was driving him somewhere, he said, I don't want to go to anybody's house to eat prasadam. I don't care about prasadam. No. That's, I'm not that kind of person. No. What I want is, I want food of questions. You give me question. You may not give me strawberry, you may not give me khichdi or whatever, but give me a lot of questions, he said. So that is what is, no, is the food. Questions are food for the preacher. Like that. So, and genuine questions really attract and make them also very happy. So by asking them questions, good questions, we are also rendering a service to them in that sense. So how? Because they are always eager to fulfill the mission of Srila Prabhupada. By we asking questions, they are able to fulfill Srila Prabhupada's mission. They are then able to serve their spiritual master's instructions. So that way it works.
Okay.
And usually questions can be directed towards personal application or preaching application. Those are the best type of questions to be asked. Maharaj, how do I improve my sadhana? Maharaj, I'm struggling to come for Mangalarti. Like that. These are the kind of questions. Of course, we should ask technical questions as well. For example, when someone like Bhanu Maharaj comes, then we can ask those technical questions for which, you know, sometimes we, you know, from preaching point of view, we still need to be very armed with technical answers as preachers. Otherwise, somebody will think that, you know, you are doing some sentimental business here, right? So we need to ask technical questions also. So somebody may ask, okay, what is the difference between Pradhan and Mahatattva, right? Now that is not very, very important for our sadhana, but it's very important from a preaching point of view. Because what will happen when we preach, people will come from all kinds of institutions. Some people will come from all kinds of Mayavadi schools into our class, right? So then we need to be able to explain to them that, look, we are not only chanting Hare Krishna Mahamantra, we know what is being taught in your institution as well, in terms of the metaphysics of the cosmos and existence, right? So from that point of view, we can ask questions. Questions can be asked understanding the mood of the acharya. For example, when Bhakti Vishramba Madhava Maharaj comes, what is his mood? Tulsi Maharani. So if you ask questions on Tulsi Maharani, Maharaj is very happy. And we genuinely also have questions on Tulsi Maharani. How to take care? Then Maharaj is in his full flow after that. Right? So then that's the way we derive. Knowing the mood of an acharya, then you ask those kind of questions. With Devamrita Swami, we can ask questions, you know, which are very, for example, we can ask, you know, this is a youth group which is having this kind of a question, right? Or how to build relationships, you know, these kind of questions we can ask. You know, Maharaj is always emphasizing on these kind of things, like that. Bhanu Swami, we ask technical questions, because Bhanu Maharaj is, you know, very very sound when it comes to the technical aspects of the Shastras. You know, many acharyas themselves go to him for asking these kind of questions. So like that, so questions can be asked understanding mood of the acharya. So here we find that Arjuna wants to speak. Arjuna wants the Lord to speak about himself now. That is why he is probing the Lord, so that the Lord is now going to speak the entire Bhagavad Gita and also going to declare who he is. That's what he is going to do now. So this is the greatest welfare work for mankind. Any points here? Yes.
I heard in a lecture recently that this was also similar to what you said, was this was an intelligent way of asking a question. And then in this lecture, example was given like daughter-in-law and mother-in-law. Like they generally do not communicate so well. Always, if you give some instruction, it's hard to digest. So mother-in-law will generally tell her daughter. Some instruction, and such that the daughter-in-law is also listening, and that way it goes under the into the mind easily.
Yeah.
So that's how the question is being asked, so that other people, they will of course doubt how Krishna spoke to be respond.
Yeah. Okay. Let's read 5 and 6. The personality of Godhead said, Many births, both you and I have passed. I can remember all of them, but you cannot, O subduer of the enemy. Although I am unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all living entities, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. So, Lord Krishna is now starting to explain his appearance and disappearance from this verse onwards. Right? So in verses 5 and 6, he introduces the context of his appearance and disappearance. In verses 7 and 8, he specifically talks about when he appears and why he appears. And in 9 and 10, he is talking about the result of understanding the transcendental nature of his appearance and activities. So that is how it is structured, this section of Bhagavad Gita. So, text 5 and 6, coming back to that. So, Lord talks about his appearance and disappearance. Now, I wish I had a board here. I had done a table for all of you. But then now you have to hear and then note it down. So, please hear very, listen carefully if you can. And you can put the table. I'll let you know how to write the table. But I'll come to that point. I'll let you know when you need to start noting that. But right now, the Lord is explaining about his appearance and disappearance. And he compares, and Prabhupada writes that appearance of the Lord and disappearance is like the rising of the sun and the setting of the sun. So it's a perception that the sun has risen and the sun has set. It's not an absolute truth. The sun never rises nor it sets. It's because of our, from our point of reference, that it is rising and setting. So that's a very powerful example Prabhupada gives. And then the Lord descends by his own internal potency, not because of the influence of Maya. The Lord doesn't come under, Brahman doesn't come under the influence of Maya and make a human form which is called as Krishna. This is Mayavadi philosophy. Neither the Lord, when he comes under the influence of Maya, then he is subjugated by Maya and then appears and does human-like pastimes. No, all this is Mayavadi bogus philosophy. Right? So we have to understand that carefully. So, the Lord is soon now, the Lord is also going to show the Virat Roop after a bit of conversation. Now, why the Lord's appearance is spoken about so much in great detail is that so that his devotees can concentrate on his so many different forms. That's why the Lord is revealing his activities, pastimes, and he's also going to reveal his form. So by getting this transcendental knowledge, by understanding the appearance and disappearance of the Lord is actually also bestowing his causeless mercy on us. That's what Srila Prabhupada writes here. So that the Lord can fulfill his own desire and we can also uplift ourselves. Because the Lord is Swarat. He doesn't have to ask anyone to appear. Whenever he feels, he is very free to appear in whichever form that he wants to uplift human society. Like that. So Prabhupada also writes that the Lord appears with Chaturbhuj. He can appear with 400 form, and at the same time he can also appear in 200 form. At the same time he can appear in an animal form. At the same time he can appear in a form which is half man, half animal. Right. So there is nothing that is constraining in terms of his appearance. He can appear in any form whatsoever. The Lord is Aja. Aja means unborn. And Avyay means is without deterioration. Vyatyai means deterioration. Avyai means without interruption, without deterioration. The Lord has many incarnations, but ite chamsha kalapumsha krishnastu bhagavan swayam. This Vasudeva Krishna, this dhir prashanta Krishna who's speaking to Arjuna is the
Lord himself.
Lord himself, the highest form, Krishna himself. Again, in terms of mood, dhir lalita and dhir prashanta is different. But again, Vasudeva is the supreme personality of Godhead. Like that. So Prabhupada says the example is given of Vaidurya stone. The Vaidurya stone can appear in different colors. But still the identity of the Vaidurya stone is still the same. Devotee may forget the Lord. But devotee can remember the Lord by the grace of Guru. But the Lord in any case never forgets the devotee in any situation. So now you may draw the table if you like. So you can put two columns. Differences between Lord Krishna and the conditioned living entity. So what, in a tabular form we can summarize the entire section. So you can remember these points for your personal and preaching application. On the left hand side you may write Lord Krishna. On the right side column you may write conditioned living entity. So the first point on the side of Krishna. So the title is what? The title of this table is Differences between Lord Krishna and the Conditioned Living Entity. The first point is Lord Krishna is eternal and remembers the past, present and future. Right? Eternality. He is achyuta. He never forgets anything and he is infallible. He cannot make mistakes. On the other hand, the living entity, the similarity is what? He is eternal, but the living entity has a forgetful nature because tatascha shakti, like that. So that is the first difference between Lord Krishna and the conditioned living entity. The second difference is the Lord remembers all its births because his body does not change or deteriorate. Avyayam. Whereas a devotee's body changes with every time. With every death, the devotee's body changes. Even during this lifetime, our body changes and deteriorates. So we forget our childhood. What to speak of childhood? We sometimes forget what we discussed in the previous class. Correct? So that is our memory. Right? But the Lord's memory is such that he says that after so many trillions of years before I spoke something, and he is telling that to Arjuna. His memory is so sharp. The third point is the Lord appears by his own will. And we are forced to appear by our
karma.
This is the third point. Right? Difference between Lord's appearance and our appearance. The Lord's body is transcendental, whereas our body is material. This is the fourth point. The fifth point is there is no difference between the body and the self of the Lord. This is called as Advaitam. No difference between Lord's body and soul. Whereas for us, the soul requires an external body. Gross body as well as subtle body is there. So we are not that body. Whereas the Lord, Abhinnatvam Nama Namino, and he and his body are one and the same. And the Lord's body is characteristic of his qualities. Whereas, you know, in Radha Gopinath Prabhu says, in SSR CD, a man can be named as Nayan Sukh and he is blind. Right? Nayan Sukh means what? Very eyes which are very pleasing. And then the man is born blind like that. So there is no relation. There can be a man, Mr. Lakpati.
Lakshmipati.
Mr. Lakshmipati. Lakshmipati means the one who is the husband of the goddess of fortune. But he may not have anything in the bank.
Like
so there is no relationship between the substance and the name of that substance in this material world. Whereas the Lord is not like that. Om Purnamadam Purnam. Complete. Like that. Okay, so these are the different points that are coming in. This is the gist of what is given in 5 and 6.
Two questions here. So the living entity, conditioned living entity, is eternal but forgetful. So once the soul is free from the material conditioning,
then he is not a conditioned living entity.
So okay, but that soul will remember everything at that stage.
Yeah. So remembrance is the true nature of the soul. Forgetfulness is an artificial state of the soul. Does it make sense?
Yes.
So it's not an imposition on the mind. Remembrance is already there, but forgetfulness is covering the remembrance like that. When forgetfulness goes away, the remembrance manifests on its own. Remembrance doesn't have to come from outside anywhere. It is already there inside. It has to become manifest. Yes.
Upaji, there are some people could remember their past birth.
Yes.
Few births they can remember. How is it possible?
It is possible by the will of the Lord. For example, in Srimad Bhagavatam, Jad Bharat was able to remember his past birth as Maharaj Bharat. So the Lord, it is mentioned specifically that because of his advanced nature, then the person was given remembrance of past birth. Even for some conditioned souls, the Lord may give it because the karma of the soul may be such that they remember their past birth. So how the laws of karma work, why they work for a particular person a particular way, nobody can say. But it's entirely possible.
In the SSRCD, Rajanath Prabhu was giving many instances where people remember their past birth. Because he was also given a book called, I just remember the name, where the doctors are studying how they remember the past birth. He was just trying to convince the people how that there is birth after this, in the same soul comes after making the SSRCD.
But it is the Lord's blessing that we don't remember our past birth. It's the Lord's mercy on us. If we remember, then we don't know what will happen. Then, for example, I don't know, we may suddenly find that, oh yeah, my husband is there, in the pot there, the dog might have been the husband in the last lifetime. You can imagine what will happen to him then. Oh, husband, what are you doing here? Yes.
So just recently what we were studying on sixth canto was Maharaj Chitakel's son when he was brought up again by Angira Muni and Nandamani. where he said, who is my father? And he started looking at his had so many fathers.
Yeah, so many fathers. Which father? Suppose our son asks, which father you are? I remember in past so many, then you don't know what will happen to him. Thankfully, Krishna has not given remembrance of past birth. So actually, it is mercy on us.
And Krishna says in chapter 7 or somewhere that remembrance and forgetful comes from me.
Mattah Smriti Jnanamapa 15.15. Alright. Whenever, okay, now 7. The most famous verse which everybody in India knows because of television. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself to deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to re-establish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. So what we'll do is, so we'll read the first paragraph of 8. But please, all of you, please read this before coming to the class. Otherwise, you may feel frustrated that when a purport is skipped, actually our heart also misses a beat. Oh, why is not reading purport like that? But purport is supposed to be read at home. In 2 hours, it's because this chapter has got huge purports. If we start reading, then we'll never finish the class. So please read and come. So text 8. So, Priya Mataji, you want to read?
According to Bhagavad Gita, the salt of holy man is a man in Krishna consciousness. The person may appear to be irreligious, but if he has the qualification of Krishna consciousness, holy and fully, he is to be understood to be a sadhu. And
Dushkrita, Vinashaya cha Dushkrita.
Applies to those who do not care for Krishna consciousness. Such miscreants are Dushkrita, are described as foolish and the lowest of mankind, even though they may be decorated with a mundane education, whereas a person who is 100% engaged in Krishna consciousness is accepted as a sadhu, even though such a person may be neither learned nor well cultured. As far as the atheistic are concerned, it is not necessary for the Supreme Lord to appear as he is to destroy them, as he did not with the demons Ravana and Kamsa. The Lord has many agents who are quite competent to vanquish demons, but the Lord especially descends to appear his unalloyed devotees who are always harassed by the demons. The demon harasses the devotee, even though the letter may happen to be his king. Although Prahalad Maharaj was the son of Hiranyakashipu, he was nonetheless persecuted by his father, although Devaki, the mother of Krishna, was the sister of Kamsa. She and her husband Vasudeva were persecuted only because Krishna was to be born of them. So Lord Krishna appeared primarily to deliver Devaki rather than to Kamsa, but both were performed simultaneously. Therefore, it is said here that to deliver the devotee, to vanquish the demon miscreants, the Lord appears in different incarnations.
Thank you. So what are the points?
I was listening to one lecture too, and apparently summarized just this particular point. This is actually Krishna's mission statement, which is what is given why he actually comes. So this is the crux of why he actually generally he comes to deliver the pious and basically the devotees. That's his mission, not to kill them. That's the part of the process which is what I
Someone raised a hand.
I think there are 3 points which you told in one of the lectures earlier. One was to deliver the pious person, second was to kill the demons, and third was to establish the religion.
And Prabhu, example is given when Narayan is in Chaturbhuja form, he has Shankha, Chakra, Gada, and Padma. Shankha is for the pious sigmen and Chakra is to kill the demon. Similarly, Padma is for the devotees and Gada is for the demons. So both, all the is mentioned.
The Prabhupada mentioned that Lord could have appeared. It is not required for Lord to appear. He can even do this activity by any of these expansions. But Lord appears for his own purpose. Like he wants to enjoy the rasa. So that is another aspect of the Lord that he wants to enjoy. So either to paritra and sadhana or to save his devotees, associate devotees, or to kill the demon. In both, he's enjoying.
Prabhupada is giving the definition of a sadhu. External qualifications are not relevant. Even though he is highly qualified, if he is not Krishna conscious, he is termed as Vishwarupam. But if he is following Krishna conscious, even though he doesn't have proper material qualifications, still he is considered to be a sadhu.
Anything from verse 7? For those people who have read the purpose. Madhavan Prabhu, any point from verse 7 you want to tell us?
Okay, we discussed this in quite detail. And then the three reasons why the Lord says that he motives the devotees to kill the demons and to reestablish the religious principles. In 7 it was Vayava and Vayava. And all the things that were just coming to our mind now, you know, this is the Madhavala quoting in. You were trying to preach, you were trying to elaborate on this base in the Diyapa Bhakti Bhiksha program in the Nisar. Why does Lord take avatar in the Nisar Har Zul Me Mitane?
Yes, what?
Har Zul Me Mitane.
Okay.
We are talking about this.
Okay. Okay. So, verses 7 and 8, as we mentioned earlier, talks about, verse 7 talks about the when and verse 8 talks about the why. So, Srijami. Prabhupada uses, so Lord uses the word Srijami. Yada yada yi dharma se. Sorry. Yeah.
It's
manifestation. Srijami. Srijami. So, Srijami, the word Srijami means what?
Manifests.
So, not born. Srijami, I manifest. This is a very, very important point, especially to defeat the
Mayavadis.
The Lord is not born, he is manifest. The sun doesn't rise, the sun manifests itself. Right? So from our viewpoint, the sun is rising and setting. So our logic is completely different. Right? But the reality is completely different again. It is just manifesting and disappearing from our vision. So the Lord also says, I am unborn, it's just that I manifest and unmanifest to people. Yes.
So Prabhu, this meaning of Srijami which Prabhupada gives here, is it manifest because it's in relation to Krishna, or is it the actual meaning of Srijami is manifestation?
Srijami. Manifestation. Prabhupada writes manifestation. What does Prabhupada write in translation?
Because he says Srijami cannot be used in the sense of creation.
Yeah.
So is it that because Srijami, if it's for a normal conditioned soul, it is creation, it's born, but because it's used for Krishna, is manifestation. Is it that?
No, so soul is also not born. No? Soul is also unborn. We have studied that in second.
But in this case, Krishna is manifesting in his actual transcendental form, right?
Yes.
But the soul, even though he is unborn, he's taking a
material form. Yes.
So he is actually his. So my question is, like, is Srijami the meaning, manifestation is only because it's used for Krishna?
Yes,
is it?
It's for Krishna. Yes.
So it's for you and me, then it would have been creation.
Born.
In one sense. It would be atrocious to say I am manifested in this world. You can imagine what will happen. Too early to say that. Maybe after many, many lifetimes someday. We can manifest.
Another point would be because Krishna decides his when to be born, where to be born, who should be his parents, right? So that is where the Srijami may be relevant.
Yeah.
But we don't choose our parents and place of birth.
Correct. Otherwise they would have been born in Australia. We don't have to apply for PR. Yesterday we were doing a program in Tarnate yesterday night. You were mentioning that. Quit India. Like Gaurang Prabhu says in one lecture. The Indian software engineers have taken it very seriously. Quit India movement. Which started by Mahatma Gandhi. So he asked the Britishers to quit India, but now Indians are quitting India. So we go to manifest in different places. For different reasons. Alright. So Srijami means manifest. So it's very clear that the Lord is not born out of a compulsion. So there are three reasons for the Lord's appearance. The first reason is circumstantial appearance of the Lord. Three purposes are there. One is paritranaya sadhuna, vinashaya cha duskrita, and dharma samsthapanarthaya. So let's take dharma samsthapanarthaya. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also manifested for Yuga Dharma, to inaugurate the Yuga Dharma or Sankirtan movement, chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, like that. So, the Lord Krishna manifests to give us, to again re-establish the principles of religion, right? So, what is the highest Dharma? Sarva Dharman Parityajya Maam Ekam Sharanam. So, Lord Krishna himself came and towards the end gave the highest Dharma statement. Highest dharma in this world is to take shelter of Krishna. I will deliver you from all sinful reaction, do not fear. So don't worry that I am not following this dharma, I am not following that dharma. A devotee need not follow Varnashrama dharma. Varnashrama dharma is given, definitely. Lord himself enunciates that, speaks about that. However, towards the end, he says, Sarva dharman, sab dharma ko chhod do. Leave everything and then maam ekam charanam vaja. Saranagati is the highest dharma, like that. So for this, to remind us of that highest dharma, dharma samsthapanarthaya. So he's again and again coming. Now, Bhagavad Gita 14.26. If you'll have, let's go and see what is mentioned there. 14.26. Page 624. So there is a context that Lord Krishna is mentioning here. Actually, it's on 14.26, which is Sarva Dharman Parityajya. 18.66. Made a mistake. 18.66. I had a typo here. On. So, 18.66. The Lord has described various kinds of knowledge and processes of religion. Knowledge of the Supreme Brahman, knowledge of the Super Soul, knowledge of the different types of orders and statuses of social life, knowledge of the renounced order, knowledge of non-attachment, sense control, meditation. He has described in so many ways different types of religion. Now, in summarizing Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that Arjuna should give up all these processes that have been explained to him. He should simply surrender to Krishna. That surrender will save him from all kinds of sinful reaction, for the Lord personally promises to protect him. So the Lord is coming here again to remind us and give us a personal promise. So that is dharma. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Srila Bhakti, Baldev Vidyabhushan, they have commented that the Lord comes to attract the pious people plus satisfy his unalloyed devotees. So they give, this they call as the prime purpose of the Lord's appearance. Because the miscreants can anyway be killed by the Lord. Just by his thinking, he can kill the demons. So he doesn't have to come specifically, and that to himself, to kill demons. Kesha Prabhu was mentioning in one of the Bhagavatam classes that Lord Krishna actually, in his original form, he doesn't kill any demons. All demon killing activity is done by the Vasudeva feature of the Lord. Lord Krishna expands as Balram. Balram expands as Narayana. Expands as Chaturvyuha. Vasudev, Sankarshan, Aniruddham and Pradyumna. All this demon killing activity is all the function of Vasudeva Krishna. Like that. And the same Vasudeva Krishna was Krishna in Turukshetra is Vasudeva. Vasudeva Krishna. Like that.
Even Vrindavan, right?
Vrindavan, the Lord is not engaged in killing demons and all. Now, there is a different thing you can say, how Putana was killed and all that. But that's a separate subject matter. We will not talk about it now. But usually, the killing is conducted by the Vasudeva feature of the Lord. Alright. So the Lord is Akhila Rasamrita Murthy. Akhila Rasamrita Murthy means what? That he is the reservoir of all rasas, like that. Reservoir of all rasas. So he wants to engage in different pastimes with his devotees. With Bhishma, and he wants to fulfill the desire of his devotees, because he is an intimate servant of his devotee. So Bhishma wants to worship the Lord in chivalry ras. Therefore the Lord is manifesting and taking that wheel and then proceeding towards him. Jaya Vijay knew the Lord's desire, that the Lord wanted to fight. So Jaya Vijay, who are his gatekeepers in Vaikuntha, they realized. They said, if the Lord wants to fight, you know, we really need to irritate him. Correct? Because the Lord is the Supreme. Who can have more tolerance and patience than the Supreme Lord? Bhrigu Muni, was it? Who kicked the Lord on the chest. Even then the Lord was not agitated. He is telling Bhrigu Muni, your legs might be, you know, paining. Your feet must be paining. Like that he said. Right? So, for a Lord, Mataji, if you want, you can sit on a chair, please. Or if you want, you can stand also. No problem. Please feel free. I know this is a bit uncomfortable. Please pardon for today. Next class again, we'll go back to the study room downstairs. So, that Supreme Lord, who has got that supreme patience, when Bhrigu Muni kicked him, he is asking, you know, your feet are paining. Now, such a supremely patient Lord, how he can be agitated and made angry? How? How can you make your Lord really angry?
By
troubling his devotees. So Jaya Vijay knew that Lord wants to really fight now. He has developed that rasa. He wants to fight with someone. Right? So we have to really trouble his devotee now. Right? So then they manifested as Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. Then Ravana and Kumbhakarna. Then
Shishupala and Kamsa.
Shishupala and Dantavakra. And then Jagaya and Madhavakra. Really wanted to irritate. So that the Lord is compelled to remove Sudarshan Chakra and come after them. Right? And the Lord also knows that if someone really has to give me a tough fight, who has to empower that devotee? Lord only can empower that devotee to give him a tough fight. Right? And who will the Lord give a power of attorney like that? So his intimate devotee. So this is very complex. So the Lord is Akhila Rasamrita Murthy. So there is many, many reasons for his appearance. Right? He may come, he may do some pastimes here. Right? Essentially to fulfill the desires of his devotees, and also by seeing those pastimes, he gives us valuable lessons on how to live life, and also tries to attract us away from material life and take us back to Godhead by giving us faith in his holy name, like, and faith in his pastimes and activities. Like that. So that those are the different reasons why the Lord appears. Those are the mukhya reasons why the Lord appears. Killing demons is incidental, but fulfilling the desires of devotees, taking the devotees back to, attracting them back to Godhead, like the Pied Piper of India. That's why he comes. So the Lord's appearance is, the scheduled appearance of the Lord is given here. What is the scheduled appearance of the Lord? End of Dwapar Yuga, 28th millennium of the 7th Manu of a day of Brahma. That is when the Lord appears, once in a day of Brahma. 28th millennium of the 7th Manu. So, that is a scheduled appearance. But as much as we say scheduled appearance of the Lord is not bound by any schedule. He is Swarat. He is free to do it. He is free to appear anywhere, anytime. Nothing can stop him like that. So, it's not that, you know, it was not scheduled. How come he has suddenly turned up? It's not like that. So, Lord can do anything. He is not obliged to appear or not appear. Like that. So, there are some of the characteristics around his appearance which are important, which are coming in this paragraph. The first one is the mission of the Lord, which we already explained, and Yogeshwar Govind Prabhu also mentioned. This is the mission statement, like that. Example, Dharma. Dharma is one of the missions. Dharma samsthapanartha. So, Gautam Buddha, the Lord himself manifested as Gautam Buddha for what? Dharma? To enunciate which aspect of Dharma? Ahimsa, non-violence. So that's why Lord appeared as Gautam Buddha specifically. Lord came as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. For which Dharma? To establish what is called as Vipralamba Seva. Mood of serving Krishna in separation. Like that. So first characteristic is the mission. The second is that the Lord's appearance is sanctioned. It is sanctioned by himself, and also it has got scriptural mentions. Every incarnation of the Lord has got scriptural mentions. Therefore, nobody can claim to be a claim to be an incarnation. Tomorrow, if I claim I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then you should ask a question. Which scripture mentions that you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Like that. Okay. And I have to give proof of that. Otherwise, we should reject such a person who is not able to give evidence, scriptural evidence. Then the place. The Lord can appear anywhere. It's not required that the Lord only appears in India. It's not like that. The Lord has appeared in different places, in different forms, all over the world. And the Lord has also appeared in India as Krishna himself in Vrindavan. So that is why Bharata Bhumite Aila Manushya Janma Yara Janma Sartaka Kari Karapara Upaka. So therefore we are very fortunate. It is mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So people who are born in the holy land of India are fortunate and by default Krishna conscious. We saw yesterday also when we did the Tarnate program, we saw so many people, lot of piety, people coming with Ganesh idols, and then they don't know the supreme truth, but still piety has not left them. Even sometimes, the hardened, the most hardened criminals in India, politicians also, still will not hesitate in bowing down to a deity when the temple is there. They'll just bow down and go. They may be the most corrupt men, but somewhere in the lineage, piety is still there inside. Like that. So the Lord can appear anywhere. The Lord's message, the message that he gives is depending on time, place and circumstance. Just like maths can be taught at the grade 2 level and maths can be taught at the university level and PhD level also. So the message is different. The Lord sent his intimate servant Jesus Christ to give a message, right? That message of love, right? Message of love. So Lord Jesus tried to come and give the message of love of Godhead. But what happened? They crucified him. So Lord Jesus said, I have many more things to tell you all, but you people are not ready for it. So for whatever little bit he told, he was crucified. Right? Whereas Lord Krishna is telling in Bhagavad Gita, my dear Arjuna, there is nothing more to be told. So you can understand that Sanatana Dharma religion is complete. Right? Whereas other religions, yes, they are glorious, but they have been given based on time, place and circumstance, and in some cases, though the full thing was to be given, it was not allowed by the will of providence not to be given at that time. Like that. So in the Chaitanya Charitamrita it is mentioned that such incarnations of the Lord, whatever incarnations come, they are all, they have their identity in the spiritual world as well. And when they descend from the spiritual world, from their original identity, they are called as avatara. Avatara means one who descends. For example, there is a planet for Narsingadeva in the spiritual world. There is a planet for Lord Ram called Ayodhya in Vaikuntha planet. The way one wants to worship, the one gets destination according to that. Let's read verses 9 and 10 now. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving this body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. One of the most important verses of the Bhagavad Gita. Janma karma cha me divyam. My appearance and disappearance is transcendental. Most important verses. Like that. Next verse, verse 10. Being freed from attachment, fear and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they all attained transcendental love for me. So, Srila Prabhupada writes in this 9 and 10 purports, there are many important points that are coming across. The Lord is explaining here the result that we derive from understanding his transcendental birth and activities. Result is given. What is the result?
Attaining is about.
Attaining is about. Janma karma cha me divyam devam yo veti tatvatah tyaktva deham punar janma naiti mam heti. So you don't have to come back into this material world. So liberation. So liberation is the key message that Lord Krishna wants to communicate here. One who understands this can quickly attain mukti. Not only after death, but jivan mukti. In this very lifetime, one who understands the transcendental nature of the appearance and disappearance of the Lord, and who understands the nature of his activities and pastimes, can be liberated while being in the same body. Like that. Jivan mukti. such liberation, impersonalists take many, many lifetimes. The yogi sitting in the Himalayas, they may take many, many lifetimes to attain that same liberation. What devotee gets very easily, simply by putting faith in the Lord's appearance and pastimes. Therefore, Lord Krishna is telling Arjuna, please cultivate this Krishna consciousness with faith and knowledge. There is faith required here. So he's talking, you know, faith is required, but knowledge is also there. Both have to be there, faith and knowledge. Now, if you go back to third chapter, text 10. What is mentioned there?
As a sacrifice of Vishnu.
Huh?
In the beginning of creation, the beginning of all creatures sent for generations.
Again, I have a typo in my. But somewhere the Lord is mentioning about attachment here. One of these verses, he's talking about attachment.
One has to get rid of all three states of attachment to the beginning.
Where?
Which
one was it?
Text 10, purport.
The purport,
Yeah.
Where is it mentioned?
Purport, almost to the down problem.
Also in verse 9, work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. Otherwise, work causes bondage in this material world.
Correct. But then now I'm talking about what Yamuna Jeevan Prabhu is mentioning. Now, where is that Yamuna Jeevan Prabhu? Can you tell us?
This verse number, line number 26, something like that. One has to get rid of all three states of attachment to the material world.
The page number? Your book is different.
Yeah.
So, are you talking about verse 10 now? Text 10?
Yeah.
Towards the end, you are saying?
Yeah.
It's here. Book.
Where?
Before the two slokas within that purport.
Okay. One has to get rid of,
Yeah.
One has to get rid of.
Just not getting that.
Text number 10. The first paragraph. So, you can read.
One has to get rid of all three stages of material consciousness, attachment to material life, fear of a spiritual personal identity, and the conception of a void that arises from frustration in life. Okay. Now, so it is mentioned there that all these three concepts have to be get rid of. So this verse here, which we are reading now, text number
10.
In transcendental knowledge, saying being free from attachment, fear, and anger. So that is the relationship of that purport to this. That is a link. Being freed from attachment, fear, and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they all attained transcendental love for me. So Prabhupada is writing that the knowledge, that the self-realization has got two components. One is that we are not the body. But another is what? We are the spirit soul, not the body. That's one aspect. But the higher aspect is what? The spirit soul is a servant of Krishna. So many people, even the Mayavadis know the first part, but the Mayavadis don't know the second part. So Prabhupada says that the people who know the second part are much more glorious than the people who know the first part. That is far superior. So Srila Prabhupada says, now if you read this, it's a very interesting, if you read the translation itself, it's very interesting. See what is written. Being free from attachment, fear, and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they all attained transcendental love for me. So what does this indicate? This indicates that simply being freed from attachment, fear, and anger is not enough. What is ultimately Lord Krishna is saying towards the end? One must have transcendental love for me. So this is again a verse for the Mayavadis. Mayavadi may also be free from attachment, fear, and anger, but what he does not attain is what? Transcendental love. The Mayavadi, impersonalist, does not attain that transcendental love. That liberation he does not have. So, having said this verse, question can come that what if someone takes shelter of Lord Krishna with Anya Abhilasha. Anya Abhilasha. Anya Abhilasha means what?
Other desires.
I'm taking shelter of Lord Krishna, but really not for the right, with other desires. What if someone is not interested in the eternal service of the Lord? Right? Or maybe someone is more inclined to knowledge of Brahman. And with that aspect, someone is taking shelter of Lord Krishna. So the next verse is saying how the Lord reciprocates with such souls. You have a question? Can we take it later because okay. Time? Just park it and ask me later towards the end of the class. As all surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Pritha. So, Lord says, Prabhupada writes in his purports that there are three types of people: bhaktas, jnanis, and yogis. So, as one surrenders to me, I reciprocate in accordance with that. How do we understand this? So, the bhaktas, the Lord says, again, what is the context of this discussion? The Lord's pastimes, the eternality of Lord's activities and pastimes. That's a common theme. Now, how do each of these people understand the eternality of the Lord's pastimes? So, the bhakta, he understands this, how he actually believes 100%. He trusts that the Lord's appearance and disappearance are transcendental, and he worships the Lord and he worships the Lord's pastimes. To such a person, the Lord says, I make such a person a perfect devotee. And I actually make him a parshad. Parshad means what? Intimate servant of the Lord. So that their birth and disappearance are also eternal along with me. Does it make sense? Our birth and death are not eternal in this material world. When will they become eternal? When Viraj Prabhu said, when a soul actually becomes a sadhana siddha, and then comes only for the mission of Krishna. So that birth is transcendental. And that birth is eternal also. Why? Because after winding up here, that same soul may go to another universe where Kali Yuga is going on to deliver the people in that universe. Another universe. Another universe. So on and so forth. Like for example, I think it was probably His Holiness Indradyumna Maharaj who has written somewhere saying that what will we do in his greatest desire is to keep on serving Srila Prabhupada like this, life after life. What will we go and do in the spiritual world? Like that, isn't it? So there is mission of Prabhupada here. So many souls have this kind of a desire who are, yes, it's not that they are not interested in going back to spiritual world, but they have so much attachment for their guru's mission that is higher than going back to spiritual world. So like that. So the Lord, then the appearance and disappearance of such persons also become transcendental. They are not material. They are not appearing because of their karma. They are appearing because of a completely different reason. So this is the reward that Lord Krishna offers to his devotee. Just like his birth and activities are also transcendental, the devotee's birth and appearance also transcendental. However, the jnanis, now how do they consider? They consider the janma and the leela of the Lord as temporary and as a form of maya. They think that Lord's appearance is a product of Maya. When Brahman comes in contact with Maya, then it takes a form. You call it as Rama, you call it as Krishna, you call it as Ganesh. How does it matter? Now, this is the mundane, concocted understanding of the Lord, which is not genuine. Not even mundane, it's actually bogus. Bogus is the right word, right? So, such people, they also approach me. But the Lord says, their appearance and disappearance is not eternal. It is temporary, the Lord says, right? So, the Lord binds them into the cycle of birth, disease, old age and death. So every birth and death of theirs becomes temporary. It's a series of temporary births and deaths like that. And Maya is tightly gripping them. They cannot get rid of Maya's noose. And the Lord says, Maya's, why he does that? Because they think that Maya is more powerful than Brahman. That is why Maya is able to subjugate Brahman. Does it make sense? So they have more faith in the power of Maya than the power of Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the Lord says, okay, let me then put more of your faith wherever you want to vest it. Ye yatha mam prapadyante tam tathaiva bhajamyaha. Then you want to worship like that. So okay, so fine. Let Maya be supreme most to all of you. So they get always subordinating. They are always subordinating to Maya. Then the third class of special jnanis or yogis, different category, who consider the same janma and leela of the Lord as manifestations of Parabrahman. Right? So they consider the Lord's manifestation as the manifestation of Satchidananda. Like that. So, they worship the Lord for perfecting their jnana. They worship the Lord basically to get rid of their gross and subtle bodies. So, they can merge into the Satchit Ananda, Brahman of the Lord. So, the Lord to such people, he says, I reciprocate by giving them Brahmananda. By giving the happiness that is prevalent in Brahman. But only to the devotee, he gives the ultimate. He makes them their partial, intimate associate. Like that. So, having heard this, then the next question may arise. Of course, there are lower modes also of understanding God. Some people most of the people don't fall in these categories also. Very few people are Mayavadis also in this material world. People are mostly only interested, those who believe in God, they are only interested in, they understand God as the order supplier. That's all. And some people may understand Him as protector. A Parvadigar. A protector, they may say. Like that. Okay. So, therefore, that understanding is very less. So, the hierarchy of understanding is given in text 11. The question now arises, now if Lord Krishna gives a soul, whatever the soul wants, ye yatha mam prapadente, so he is fulfilling the desires, then why doesn't everyone then surrender to the Lord? Because he is anyway fulfilling their desire based upon how they approach him. Then why not everyone surrenders to the Lord and get their desires fulfilled? Why do some people still don't surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead? The answer is in text 12 for that. Men in this world desire success in fruitive activities and therefore they worship the demigods. Right? Quickly, of course, men get results from fruitive work in this world. So, Srila Prabhupada writes, one who worships Lord Krishna for material benefits obtains his desire, but the problem that what happens when we worship Lord Krishna with material benefits? What happens? Lord Krishna purifies that desire. That is the biggest problem, and people don't want purification of desires. When in a classroom you go and say that if you worship Krishna, what do you want? I want to, yesterday one lady was saying, what is your goal of life? I want to become the greatest doctor in the world, she said. Internet program, right? Now if you tell her that once you worship Lord Krishna, he'll remove this desire from your heart. Do you think she will worship him? Two new stage of devotional life. No, Ganesh is only. Vigna Vinayaka, please remove obstacles so that I can continue worshipping like that. So, the problem with worshipping Lord Krishna is he will remove that desire. He will purify the heart. Not forcefully remove. He will purify the heart. And this purification may take some time. And the worst is after that, you may not desire that. Even after he gives you. Even if he makes you the greatest doctor in the world, you may say, so what? No. I can still only do something for the body. I cannot stop birth, disease, old age and death. That realization may come. So the doctor may get detached from those achievements. Right? So this will happen in Krishna consciousness. Right? So once a devotee, and what happens when the Lord gives such a thing to a devotee, the devotee no longer wants that. The example is Dhruva Maharaj. Everyone knows Dhruva Maharaj Pastor. He wanted a big kingdom which is greater than his father. But the Lord gave him an entire planet. But even after getting an entire planet, what is Dhruva Maharaj saying? I was asking for broken pieces of glass. He wanted a kingdom, so he left his father and mother also and went to the forest. But when the Lord gave him an entire planet, he says, I don't want it. Lord, I just want your service. But the Lord says, no, you have desired, therefore you must remain there. So the Lord gave him a spiritual planet in the material world. So we have to be very careful of what we desire. In that sense. Na janam na dhanam na sundare. That's why we have to keep on reciting those prayers. Very, very, very careful of the desires. So, because these are the characteristics of Krishna Bhakti, that the Lord may purify and our desires may no longer exist, then many neophyte devotees, they don't want to approach Krishna. They say, no, we'll better go to demigods only. Therefore, out of fear of this phenomenon, greedy people worship the demigods to attain fruitive results. Now next question may arise in the mind. That means, does Lord Krishna by this phenomenon control everyone's desires? That may be the next question that will come. Is he the one who decides who is materialist, who is impersonalist and who is a devotee? Is the Lord deciding that? Or question may come or doubt may come. Therefore, the Lord himself is responsible for suffering and enjoyment in this world. Because he is deciding everything now. Right? Then the answer is given in text 13. Lord Krishna is answering that question. He says, according to the three modes of material nature and the work associated with them, the four divisions of human society and are created by me. And although I am the creator of this system, you should know that I am yet the non-doer, being unchangeable. So it is mentioned here that Lord Krishna, yes, he did establish the Varnashrama structure. All Varnashrama ashramas are coming from Lord Krishna himself. But the Lord doesn't place the jivas under each varna and ashram. Does it make sense? He creates a structure. For example, the government has created a church as well as the government has created a pub. So it has created an infrastructure. Now it's your choice whether you want to go to church or you want to go to pub. That choice the government is giving you. It's not taking away. Similarly, the Supreme Governor, Lord Krishna, has established the structure, but the choice is ours, what we want to do with our life. So, in that sense, he still remains the non-doer. He neither rewards nor he punishes anyone, because he is transcendental to the whole system which he himself has established. Does it make sense? So far? Yeah. So, we must take responsibility for what we undergo. That's the key message. As controller, Lord Krishna only sanctions. He is Upadrishta and Anumanta. So, he sanctions. And he sanctions sometimes against his own desires. Why? Because we desire that. He doesn't desire that for us, but because we desire, then fine. Okay. The child should not eat too many chocolate, but still the child is wailing. It's not good. Stomach ache is there, but still is wailing. But so, okay, stop. Okay, be happy. Take one more chocolate. Like that. And continue with your stomach ache. Like that. Okay. Because you're not stopping at all. You're not understanding. When mama and daddy are telling you, don't eat, you're not understanding. You're still making life miserable. Okay, be happy, take it, but you'll have to suffer. Caution is there. Like that. So the Lord does not interfere with our free will. He tries to rectify our free will through karmic reactions. So again, for that, he has established a system. So that we are careful where to exercise our free will. Like, but he doesn't interfere with our free will. So, and he patiently waits for people who are Bahir Mukhi to become Antar Mukhi. People who have turned their faces away from him and subjugated by the laws of karma to one day turn their face towards him. So, neither he is the doer nor we are the doers. Because few verses back it is said, Prakriti Kriyamanani Gunai Karmani Sarvashah. Everything is done by the modes of material nature. So he is saying, just like you are also not the doer, I explained to you. Please understand, I am also not the doer. Both of us are not the doers. Right? Why does he say that? He says that because at times he says you are not the doers to keep us aware that material nature is the one which awards results. So we don't become proud of our achievements. So therefore Lord Krishna is telling, reminding us, you are not the doer. It's your good karma because of which you are getting promotion in your life. Right? Don't think you are the doer. You did something nice in the past. Now you are doing some activity. Therefore, because of that, you are now getting something which the other person is not getting. He may still be more capable. Right? But you have got some past karma. So don't be very proud of it. And other times, he makes us actually realize that though you are not the doers, you are still culpable for whatever you, for exercise of your free will in a particular way. In that sense, you are the doer. Because you decided to do something. Does it make sense? You might have decided under the modes of material nature. But even under the subjugation of mode of material nature, you still had a free will to turn back to advice from Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. But you allowed yourself to be subjugated. Therefore, you are culpable now for that. So, the conclusion of this section is that the jiva desires to act, Lord Krishna sanctions that act, and material nature facilitates that activity. That is the conclusion. Jiva desires, Lord sanctions, and material nature facilitates. So, if we understand this, then we will understand the gist of this section. All this about doer, non-doer, prakriti, so that's all made very clear in these commentaries. So, last two verses, text 14. There is no work that affects me, nor do I aspire for the fruits of action. One who understands this truth about me also does not become entangled in the fruitive reactions of work. So when the jiva acts on an independent platform, what happens? Karma binds the jiva. And therefore the jiva attains reactions for whatever he does. Lord Krishna, however, is aloof he doesn't have any desires, material desires. I mean, he doesn't have any material desires, and his devotees don't also have any material desires. The pure devotees of the Lord, they also don't have. So both of them don't fall under any of these categories. They don't fall under even the varna and varnashrama dharma. For devotee, all that is not applicable. However, a devotee still performs his prescribed duties under all these rules and regulations that Lord Krishna, under this structure which Lord Krishna has put, a devotee still subjugates himself just for the pleasure of the Lord, which is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. Atha Pumbir Dvija Shrestha Varanashrama Vibhagashah Sva Anushtista Dharmasya Samasiddhir Haritoshanam. So all this Varanashrama Dharma, the import, the reason for following all this is ultimately Haritoshanam, pleasure of the Lord. So when the Jiva understands these facts about Lord Krishna and applies this transcendental knowledge which Lord Krishna is giving to do work for his pleasure and becomes a servant of the Lord, then such a Jiva also becomes aloof from the karmic cycle. That is what Lord Krishna is saying. Lord Krishna is now laying the foundation for something very important, which is going to talk in the next section. Text 15. All the liberated souls in ancient times acted with this understanding of my transcendental nature. Therefore, you should perform your duty following in their footsteps. Perform your duty under the umbrella of transcendental knowledge, which other acharyas have also done. People in the past have also done. Therefore, understanding this transcendental knowledge, Lord Krishna is telling Arjuna, Arjuna, go ahead and fight this battle of Kurukshetra with faith. For whose pleasure? For the pleasure of Lord Krishna. And then he promises Arjuna, you will become liberated if you do that, because that is the power of transcendental knowledge. In the next section now, Lord Krishna will start explaining as to how externally one can be actually seen to be performing activities as if they are karma, but actually he is not incurring any karma out of those activities. So the Lord is going to be explaining how a karma should be performed in the next section of this transcendental knowledge. So before that, the Lord has established his appearance and disappearance, and he has said that I am not the doer, you are not the doer, but still you can be subjugated by the modes of material nature to do certain activities. But now in the next section, the Lord is saying, but doesn't mean that if you are doing activities, you are subjected to karmic cycle. You can still go on doing activities for my pleasure and not be touched by the karmic cycle. So not everyone who is engaged in activity are bound by karmic cycle, nor is inactivity a way of escaping the karmic cycle. Is it confusing? We will talk about it in the next class, because it's 9:15. All of you are tired. So I will repeat this section as an introduction to the next class. So when you are fresh at 7 o'clock, then you will understand it better. Tomorrow morning is Radhashtami, so many of you have come for Mangala Arati. Stop. Please honor the cake below, and please don't forget to pray and wish Vidyavadu Mataji and also Shubhiksha Mataji. Shubhiksha Mataji, are you here in this room? Oh yes, it's your birthday as well, right? Tomorrow. Okay. Haribo. So we'll go down and we'll pray for both these Vaishnavas and take their blessings also. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.